This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
In the world of stock trading and investing, it's critical to remain unfazed by geopolitics or anticipated election results. Tune out all the noise that doesn't matter. And instead, focus on three fundamental drivers of financial markets: inflation, interest rates, and corporate profits. I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Gains. All right, joining us, Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the website UpsideStocks.com. Chuck's based in Hammond. Chuck, always great to have you on the Gains podcast.
Thanks for having me back, Andy. I appreciate it.
Well, Chuck, markets have been bouncing at or near all-time highs, but I've not overly been impressed with the Dow Transports, at least as of late. The Dow Transports, as you know, is the ultimate leading indicator and something we watch religiously, and they've been flat. But that's where I want you to start today, Chuck, is just give us your read on markets.
Well, the primary trend of the market, based on the Dow theory, which looks at the movement of the Dow Jones Industrial and Dow Jones Transportation Average, the last major signal under the Dow theory, which was last year, was bullish, and that signal is still intact. So we still regard the primary trend of the market, i.e. the trend that typically lasts a minimum of 18 to 24 months and can be much longer than that, that is still bullish. So we're in a bull market. We've had obviously a very vigorous move in the market since last November. That has continued into this year and in the first quarter. The nice thing that we're seeing you're seeing a rally in a lot of different areas this quarter. Where, you know, you've gotten decent moves in cyclical stocks, decent moves in value stocks, decent moves in small and mid-cap stocks, or at least in certain stocks in the small and mid-cap space. So you've seen a bit of a broadening in the market versus the really concentrated moves that we saw for much of 2023. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, that is a bright spot, is we are seeing more participants, you know, involved in moving higher. And that was a really concern because a lot of the gains previous to that, the year previous to that, were really a handful of tech companies. So I guess that is probably the biggest silver lining in all of this, is you're starting to see that broadening of the market. Go ahead.
Yeah, continue. That's helpful. I mean, you can make money in a lot of different areas here now. Some of the areas are doing better than others, but in the main, you know, most things are trending up. So that's a positive. The other positive is the market's real resilience in the face of what appears to be a lack of real urgency on the part of the Fed to cut rates. I think, you know, if you would have said last year that, you know, geez, the Fed may only raise rates once or twice in 2024, with the expectations at that time that the market had of, geez, I saw people saying, you know, oh, there's going to be 5-6 rate cuts, and now we might be lucky if we get 2. and yet the market has continued to move higher. And so, you know, which I think is a good thing, because that means the market is really focused more on the things that matter. Yes, interest rates matter, but I don't expect them to be going up significantly. They may not be coming down, but I think they've, you know, they've stabilized here. And, you know, the fact that corporate profits are still probably going to be okay, and we aren't going to get a recession in 2024. So I think the market is really taking its cues from that. You know, history shows that stocks can do pretty well at interest levels that we have right now. I mean, if you go back to, you know, 2015, 16, 17, and in that period when the market was doing quite well, I mean, we had rates that were reasonably comparable to where they are now. So, you know, the interest rate environment, as long as it doesn't escalate too much to the upside, I think is fine. Inflation, again, has been coming down. It has been a little bit stymied in the last couple of months, and that's something worth watching. But the trend seems to be, you know, we are well off from where we were, you know, 18 months ago, 12 months ago. So it comes down to corporate profits, as it usually does. And thus far, corporate profits seem to be okay. So, you know, that's a decent recipe for the market. You kind of mentioned at the beginning of the talk here that the one area of the market that has been less than impressive, it hasn't been awful, but it has not been great, have been the Dow Jones Transportation Average, which has really been mired in kind of a sideways trading pattern. Tuesday, the Dow Transports closed at 15,539, which is about a 7% below its July 28th high of 16,695.32. So, you know, I would love to see the transports break out of this, you know, 2-3-4 month trading range and really test and surpass that July 28th level of 16,695. To me, that's really the last kind of remaining headwind, so to speak, for the market. And as you know, Andy, the Dow Jones Transportation Average has the ability to put on points in a hurry. So I don't think that July 28th high is out of the question by any means. But it would be nice to see a little bit better strength in the Dow Transports. It would not be great to see the Dow Transports break below, say, 15,000. That would kind of be a significant downward trend that I think would probably create a lot of gravity on the rest of the indices. So as is often the case, transports are worth watching. But, you know, the fact that they're not cratering is positive. I just wish they were behaving a little bit better.
And Chuck, maybe we should keep watching those transports more a secret amongst maybe everybody in this podcast. You know, the Gaines listeners, we can keep an eye on it. It's so effective because a lot of people ignore it. And that's my point in all of it.
Exactly. Well, it is. And it's, you know, it's still one of the best economic indicators out there, and maybe the best. And, you know, and interestingly, it's behaving. Yeah. Again, the markets can be okay, which they have been doing, you know, without, you know, the Dow Transports just surging higher. But it becomes, I think, really difficult for the broad market to sustain an upward move without some help from the transports. And that's why, again, I would not want to see the Dow Transports starting to really move lower in earnest. And again, that break below 15,000 wouldn't signal a new bear market, but it would just be an overhang on the market at this point. So you don't want to see that happen.
I know a lot of the Gaines listeners have heard this before, but the reason why the Dow transports is one of the ultimate leading indicators. Explain. There's a reason why.
Well, it is. The Dow Jones Transportation Average is made up of 20 transportation related stocks. It had a component change here fairly recently. Uber now is in the Dow Transports, which, if you think about it, makes a lot of sense, given, you know, Uber is a transportation related company.
Absolutely.
With a huge market cap, and it kind of modernizes that index. But so, you know, the transportation stocks tend to be incredibly sensitive to a host of economic factors, maybe even more so than the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and so, you know, it pays to pay attention to them, because they can be the precursor to either problems in the economy or improvements in the economy. And so, you know, right now, the behavior of the index, I mean, they've come strongly off of their October low. I mean, you go back, you know, it's not like the Dow Transports haven't done anything. I mean, they bottomed on October 27th, which wasn't that long ago, at 13,556. So they're up 2,000 points in basically, you know, 5 months, which pretty good. It's a pretty good move. It's just that more recently they have been tracking here in the last month or two really sideways, and they haven't been able to kind of break out of that range. So I don't want to say that they've been stinking up the joint. It's just that it would be nice for them to kind of gather themselves and get on another breakout here. That would make me feel a bit more confident about the economy. It would make me feel more confident about the primary trend of the market as well.
Is there anything, any canary in the coal mine situation? We've talked in the last couple Gains podcasts about the threat of commercial real estate and how that has not really been factored into markets and the economy. Any other, you know, then there's some fears of recession potentially. Do you have any concerns you know, that you see, anything that really keeps you up at night?
No, not really. And again, you know, I'll say that with a caveat that a lot of times it's kind of like when you get hit by the car, you never see the car. And that's often the case with the market. It's, you know, it's what takes markets down isn't that obvious until after the fact. And because markets are forward looking. So, you know, the market behavior tends to occur before the actual event happens. Now, having said that, what are some things that do concern me? The action of the transports, I suppose, would probably be number one on that list. Again, it's not fatal at this point, but because they are so important to both the market's primary trend as well as to the economic trend, it would be nice for them to continue to kind of move higher and not stall out at these levels. That probably would rank right up there. The other factor that probably is worth considering is that, you know, and it's not surprisingly, it comes back to those three major engines, right, of market moves. It's interest rates, inflation, and corporate profits. So, you know, where's the most likely culprit in that mix? And I think if there's going to be any shortfall, it probably will be on the corporate profit side. Only, and I'm not predicting that, but it is something that could happen, especially in some of those previous high, you know, leaders in the market, those mega cap tech, those fast growing stocks,
the Nvidias, which, and the ones, yeah, that have really been the leaders. And I mean, they can't go up forever nonstop.
Well they can't grow at these rates forever, and that was my point on corporate profits. At some point here, you start getting into the tougher quarterly comparison game, where it's like, you know, company puts up 50%, 70%, 100% earnings and revenue growth, where they're not going to be able to do that for the next 5 years. They just aren't. So when those quarterly earnings comparisons and revenue comparisons start getting more difficult, and it's obvious from that the earnings growth trajectory is changing and slowing, you know, stocks have a tendency to pull back on that. So, you know, that's the other thing that concerns me a little bit, is as we move toward the second half of this year and early, you know, 2025, and I know early 2025 sounds like a far away, but it's not that far away from a market perspective, because markets typically, again, look forward, you know, 3-6 months. And so, you know, at some point, those comparisons are going to start to get pretty difficult. And how will the market respond? Will there be leadership coming from other areas to take up the slack? Those are the questions, you know, that I think about when it relates to what can kind of short circuit this rally.
All right, we're going to hit Chuck up with some picks after the break. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's an option for you. I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings. We'll be right back after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy.
All right, back with Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter in Hammond, and check out his website, upsidestocks.com. So speaking of broader participation and upsidestocks.com, wanted to kind of look at that list and talk about a couple stocks that might be poised to do something here as we see others follow those initial leaders in this comeback.
Yeah, let me give you a couple of names. First, and these are stocks that have done well, but they give readers a different way to play kind of the growth in AI. And these companies are infrastructure and construction plays that work on big projects such as data centers, which is a huge industry, growing industry. You know, we're going to need, you know, improvements in our electrical grid and infrastructure to kind of drive all of the energy needs for, you know, data centers and EVs and all that stuff. And a couple of names, I'll give you three names in that space. One is EMCOR. The symbol is EME. Another one is Sterling, STRL. And the last one is Comfort Systems, symbol FIX. So that's EMCOR, EME, Sterling, STRL, and Comfort Systems, FIX. Now, again, these stocks have done well, but I think you're going to continue to see very solid earnings and revenue growth coming out of them, and I think the trends are still favorable for them. A fourth stock that I'll give you is kind of a poor man's Costco. It's a company called PriceSmart. The symbol is PSMT. And PriceSmart has adopted kind of the Costco warehouse retail business, that membership retail, where the beauty of it's a beautiful business model where you actually pay a fee to shop at a store. Costco, you know, when you look at Costco's finances and their profit, I mean, their biggest profit driver by far is their membership fees. And that is the case here with this company, PriceSmart. The interesting thing is PriceSmart doesn't compete with Costco. They are exclusively in Latin America and in the Caribbean, and then they're in some South American countries, Colombia. And those are areas where Costco will not compete with PriceSmart. So they have kind of those markets and that model and that retail concept to themselves down there. And it's an interesting stock. It is retail. It is, you know, focused on Latin America. It's a U.S. headquartered company that does business in Central, in the Caribbean, and Latin America. And I love the business model, and it's a company that's been putting up pretty good numbers here of late. That's PriceSmart, symbol PSMT.
And, you know, it seems like some of these smaller stocks, if they really have a good story behind them and they've lagged, maybe they even buck the broader market if things get rough. Isn't it a way to get some shelter by diversification?
Sure, sure. And you saw that in a huge way in after the tech wreck in the late 90s, 2000, 2001, 2002, when, you know, a lot of those areas and large cap stocks and those crazy tech stocks started to get mauled. If you were in, you know, small caps, mid caps, and some of the other sectors of the market, you didn't get beat up so badly. Again, you didn't participate in those crazy upward moves as much, but it was a bit of a shelter in a storm. And I think that, you know, when you look around the universe right now, I mean, you know, small cap and mid cap stocks, you know, or cheaper, much cheaper relative to large cap stocks. So if
and
we do get into
a
down,
that's the whole thing is buying. I mean, part of investing is finding stocks that are on sale and buying them because, you know, the long term trend for all of this, regardless if we have a pullback or not, are things are going higher. And if there's a good story and decent prospects behind some of these stocks that are on sale, not a bad play, huh, Chuck?
Oh, no. You might have to be patient. I know there's people who bought, you know, small cap stocks 2, 3, 4 years ago or bought a small cap index and wish they had to put all their money into a large cap index because small caps have, you know, it's the same with international stocks. I mean, international stocks are offering very competitive valuations relative to U.S. stocks, but they've been offering those competitive valuations for the last 7 years.
Japan comes to mind on this. Just real quick, I wanted you to weigh on, since you're talking international, I got to throw this in there as well. Japan has been on sale and seems to be perking a little bit. Thoughts on Japan and international stocks? You talked about some of these people have been holding stocks that have been flat for a while. Explain.
Well, Japan have finally, you know, they finally got back to levels that it was at 30 years ago, the Nikkei index. So that is something that's turned around. They have seemed like they've gotten religion over there from a market standpoint where, you know, more companies are paying dividends. They're being more shareholder friendly. And they seem to have gotten out of a decades long deflation rut, and so you know the market has improved there. I know, you know, Warren Buffett's been a big booster of Japan stocks, Japanese stocks, and an investor here over the last probably 6 to 12 months. And that is a market that, you know, has been slumbering for decades. So my guess is, you know, this breakout will probably have some legs. So that's probably an area that you'll see do better. Yeah.
The vehicle that I'm thinking of too is, you know, that MSCI, that iShares MSCI Japan Value ETF. Something you might check out if you want some exposure, diversify the portfolio a little bit. And like you said, Japan is perking a little bit and could have some legs. One other thing, you know, we were talking international stocks. I mean, what do you feel about international abroad as people look to diversify their portfolio?
Yeah, you know, it's fine. I think that there has probably been, well, for example, you know, one of the biggest, if not the biggest area people put their money in 401k plans are target funds, these funds that, you know, allocate the money for you based on your age and so forth. And they're fine to a point, but boy, target funds have had just, you know, 15, 20, 25% allocations to the international side, and it's really not been helpful for them. I think I own international. I probably have anywhere from 8 to 10% on the international side in a 401k plan. I think that's plenty. I still think the best long-term opportunities are in the U.S., but yeah, to have some on the international side for diversification purposes, I think makes sense.
And then finally, you touched upon it earlier, but I want to wrap up today's Gains podcast because it's one of the most important things that we talk about. And you touched upon it earlier, the true drivers of the stock market. And I've been thinking about this, especially when people have been so preoccupied with the Fed and the noise and wars and international and all this stuff. But it still just comes down to three things, and I want you to touch upon that as we're wrapping up today's podcast.
Yeah, and I think your point is especially timely, given that we are now, you know, in what will be probably the longest election cycle ever, because the candidates came out of the primary so quickly. It was the shortest primary season. So we are going to be inundated now till November with politics, politics, politics. And, you know, everything has been politicized. And unfortunately, people have politicized their investment programs. And that is a major mistake.
Don't do it. And I'm glad you touched on that. Don't do it. Don't let politics involved in investing. Go ahead, Chuck.
No, there's going to be the tendency to do that. You're going to, you know, there's going to be internal pressure, external pressure. Don't do it. Focus on these three things, and it's inflation, interest rates and corporate profits. You know, Andy, it's interesting, you know, with the two presidential candidates, Trump and Biden, we have an interesting case study to look at, you know, how have markets performed, real track records, how have markets performed under Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. And it's interesting. When you go back and you look at the full term of Donald Trump, based on S&P returns from the election day, not inauguration day, it's the election day. That's when you really determine who's going to be the next president.
Right.
If you look at that, the S&P 500 went up about 57% during Donald Trump's four years. And interestingly, you know, his term was divided. The first 2 years were Republican-controlled Congress. The second 2 years were a split Congress. So you can actually look at granular that way, too. Over 50% for Donald Trump, and I think it was in the Democrat or in the Republican-controlled, I think those 2 years the market went up about 29%, and then the split, it went up about 22%. So that's a high hurdle. Boy, could Joe Biden possibly do that? Well, you know what? Since Joe Biden's been elected in office on the election day, Joe Biden, the S&P 500, is also up over 50%. So, and if you look at, you know, the first 2 years of his term were Democratic-controlled Congress. The market went up about 13% over those 2 years. Since the midterm elections of 2022, where now we have a split Congress, the S&P 500 is up about 35%. So, the point being, here you have two of maybe the most diametrically opposed politicians, and the market did its thing and had fairly equal returns. Now, again, results here, but my point is that, you know, I have seen a lot of presidential cycles in the 40 years that I've been working here, 40 plus years, and you can lose or make money as easily regardless of who's in the overall office and controlling Congress. It doesn't matter. Focus on inflation, interest rates, corporate profits. Don't focus on who you think is going to get the most electoral votes and what that means for your portfolio, because you're going to be wrong, I guarantee it.
I often see them predict what stocks will rally and what stocks will not do well under each candidate. And then when it comes to fruition, they're not even close. It's really interesting.
No. Yeah. I mean, you may have theories, and you may think you know, but it usually doesn't work out that way. It just doesn't. So, you know, rather than, you know, and trust me, every presidential election, I get people saying, you know, if so and so votes, I'm selling everything, or if so and so wins, I'm buying. Just don't do it. It's a loser's game. You're much better off again following the market's primary trend. What's happening to inflation, interest rates, and corporate profits? What are the Dow transports doing? Am I finding stocks I think are reasonably valued? And running an investment program like an investment program. Don't vote your portfolio based on politics.
Yeah, leave those politics out of investing and, frankly, maybe even dinner conversation. Big thanks to Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter in Hammond. And as always, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's an option for you. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings, and I look forward to seeing you then.
A News Radio WBBM podcast, powered by Odyssey.